हरि ओम सहनावावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Verses 22 to 47, all assembled dignitaries offer prayers to Lord Vishnu. Maitreya continued, as soon as Lord Vishnu was visible, all the demigods, Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, the Gandharvas and all present there, immediately offered their respectful obeisances by falling down straight before him. In the presence of the glaring effulgence of the bodily luster of Narayana, everyone else's luster faded away, and everyone stopped speaking. Fearful with awe and veneration, all present touched their hands to their heads and then prepared to offer their prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Adhoksita. Although the mental scope of even demigods like Brahma was unable to comprehend the unlimited glories of the Supreme Lord, they were all able to perceive the transcendental form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead by His grace. Only by such grace could they offer their respectful prayers according to their different capacities. 22 to 24. Yes.
So they were unable to comprehend the glory of the Lord.
No, they can't comprehend.
Yeah, but they still see Him. What's the connection?
By His grace. That's the whole point. The whole point of here is...
What is He seeing?
Means?
Like I can see somebody, and my father is standing in his glory.
They're not talking about the physical seeing. They're talking about being able to perceive the position of the Lord. So even though they couldn't understand His unlimited glories, they're able to perceive Him. But that's by the Lord's grace. So either even just the seeing, they can. That's only by His grace that they can see anyway. But besides that they're able, because they're able to offer prayers, that means they're seeing something. But they're just not seeing at His unlimited glories. They're only seeing what is according to their capacity. So, okay. This capacity is increased by the service spirit. Sevan Mukhi Jivadao. Brahma Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 234. Means that the service of the Lord begins with the tongue. This refers to chanting. By chanting Hare Krishna, one begins the service of the Lord. Another function of the tongue is to taste and accept the Lord's prasad. We have to begin our service to the unlimited with the tongue and become perfect in chanting and accepting the Lord's prasad. To accept the Lord's prasad means to control the entire set of senses. The tongue is considered to be the most uncontrollable sense because it hankers for so many unwholesome eatables. Therefore, thereby forcing the living entity into the dungeon of material conditional life. As a living entity transmigrates from one form of life to another, he has to eat so many abominable foodstuffs that finally there is no limit. The tongue should be engaged in chanting and in eating the Lord's prasad so that the other senses will be controlled. Chanting is the medicine and prasad is the diet. With these processes, one can begin his service. And as the service increases, the Lord reveals more and more to the devotee. But there is no limit to his glories, and there is no limit to engaging oneself in the service of the Lord. So the engagement of the living entity, the understanding of the Lord by the living entity is by the Lord's grace. So we see here that the Lord, by the amount of service, So we see here some will have more of a service attitude. Like, you know, Shiva is very nicely situated in devotional service. So he'll understand more. While then some of these other demigods, they'll understand less. But being demigods, they're performing their duties within the universe. So there's going to be that, from that aspect of goodness, they're going to be situated, but on the basic platform of devotional service. So to the degree of their surrender is to that degree that they will actually be able to appreciate the Lord. Right? Because otherwise, one can be very advanced to where he's liberated, but that doesn't mean he understands the Lord. On the liberated platform, there's nothing material to get in the way of seeing the Lord, means from the material side, but it doesn't mean that there's anything there positive on the devotional side. So they'll just appreciate it to a certain degree. Right? So as that devotion increases, then it gets deeper and deeper. Yes?
By the Lord's grace, everything happens. So the people,
yes,
those who are detached from the material, from the level of Brahman or Brahman or whatever, it's still by the grace of the Lord.
Yes.
It's not that they own power.
No. It's by the grace of the Lord, because, in other words, how do you get to any position anywhere in the material world? It's by following whatever laws of the Lord that fit that. So those activities, following those laws that elevate you, right, then those are rewarded with something better than if you're either not following the laws or following lower levels of laws. Is that what it is? Yes. So the whole idea is that in any case, every living entity is connected to the Lord. It's just a matter of whether they know it or not. So the general tendency is in the material world, no one knows that. They think that I'm the controller and enjoy it. Right? Probably it's making the points before very strongly about the living entity thinks I am the proprietor, I am the enjoyer, and I'm the friend. So because of that, then they're entangled. But actually, Krishna, everything belongs to Krishna. Krishna is the enjoyer of everything, and Krishna is the friend of everybody. Right? We can take part in that process on behalf of the Lord, and we get that experience. But it has a value when we see it in connection with the Lord. If it's not connected to the Lord, we don't actually get any value. Means we may get a little bit of material value, but it'll be very limited because we're not technically understanding how the universe is functioning. Right? If you follow the rule, you get some benefit. You follow the rule and understand how the universe works, you get more benefit. You do that with devotion, you get the most benefit. Does that make sense? So everybody is benefiting only by the grace of the Lord. When Lord Vishnu accepted the oblations offered in the sacrifice, Daksha, the Prajapati, began with great pleasure to offer respectful prayers unto him. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is actually the master of all sacrifices and preceptor of all the Prajapatis. Right? Because if he's the preceptor of Brahma, who's the original Prajapati, then naturally he's going to be the preceptor of the Prajapatis that are accepting Brahma as the preceptor. And he is served even by such personalities as Nanda and Sunanda. Daksha addressed the Supreme Personality of Godhead, "My dear Lord, you are transcendental to all speculative positions. You are completely spiritual, devoid of all fear. And you are always in control of the material energy. Even though you appear in the material energy, you are situated transcendentally. You are always free from material contamination, because you are completely self-sufficient." 25 to 26. According to Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, Daksha says, "You are pure consciousness alone, devoid of maya, situated in your sarup, swadhamni. Taking the role of a human, you appear to be impure, contaminated with material attachment within maya, when taking forms like Krishna or Rama. You alone are the Lord and take the covering of knowledge. Others, taking coverings of ignorance, like Shiva, although playing human roles, do not know how to act. Shiva manifested himself as self-satisfied and indifferent to me, his father-in-law, in the assembly. However, hearing of the death of Satyajit, your father-in-law, you went to Satyabhama with Balaram and began crying. When Lord Krishna and Lord Balaram heard the news, O King, they exclaimed, "Alas, this is the greatest tragedy for us." Thus, imitating the ways of human society, they lamented, their eyes brimming with tears. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:57-10. Did your nature as Atmarama disappear? Bhagavan alone is expert in all arts. Or another meaning is that Daksha, by glancing scornfully at Shiva, committed offense, and thus, even after the offense was annulled, he had a material conception of the Lord's form. Thus he says the Lord takes a human form. However, the real meaning should be understood as follows. Situated in Vaikuntha, you accept the form of the Purusha, creator of Mahat Tattva, along with Maya, and reside within the living entities in Maya as the Antaryami. The wise know the three forms of the Purusha of Vishnu. The first is the creator of Mahat Tattva. The second resides within the universe, and the third resides within all living entities. One who knows them becomes liberated, Sattva Tattva. The Lord appears to be impure, but is not. Although he is situated within Maya, he is pure since he has no relationship with it. With it, this is the meaning. This is one way to bring it out.
The point is that he said that he was indifferent to Daksha. The shield was not indifferent to Sati. So it means he was Atman, but still he acted as almost as the Lord. Because he said the Lord.
Yeah, but he leaves the Sati part out. Yeah, because that doesn't get his job done. If we're taking this particular angle, because he shows different angles you can take, but really what he's saying is just, the Lord appears to be impure, but he's not. Right? So all these examples may be given. But in theirs, so he's trying pointing out the supremacy of Vishnu, but at the same time in there may be that element of the residue of not really, it means, not appreciating Shiva as much, because he could have said Brahma or somebody else, but he always somehow knows it's always Shiva. But Shiva then also is upset, right? Because of the relationship and everything like that. But that is an eternal relationship. So, you know, yeah. But he left that part out. That's the way of, the general way of argument is that anything that doesn't match your argument, you don't even want to discuss. Like, if you ever had the thing where someone's saying something, and then you write something, and then they don't reply at all, just don't reply, and then they change the subject. So if you're going along and arguing something, and then you say something, and they change the subject, that means that's something that they can't support, doesn't support their own philosophy. And so they're changing the subject, because if you continue down that path, they'll be defeated. And not wanting to be defeated, they change the subject. So like that, that's common. So technically only Vedanta can deal with everything, because Vedanta being the original philosophy, any other philosophies being vague, having their root, you know, in philosophy, then they're going be always contained within. The problem is that if you have only part of something, even though it's correct, it's not enough. Let's just like if I take, for example, that, okay, whatever I cook, no matter what it is, you know, in the way of cooking things and stuff like that. Now, for salty preparations, it's the salt that makes it good. Right? Without salt, what's the meaning? You have the best preparation, it doesn't have salt. There's no flavor. So I could say, okay, let's get down to the essence here. Why worry about all these side things? I'll just eat salt. You understand? So the principle that salt gives the flavor is correct in that philosophy, but it's out of balance because you think it's only salt. Does that make sense? So that's how these six philosophies, then they end up as not being they end up as being bogus because their balance is wrong. Right? They accept the position of the Supreme, but they don't accept it in the proper way of devotion and everything like that. His desire and all these things, these are all left out. So only Vedanta can deal with all of this. And so that means there isn't a philosophy that you can't absorb into Vedanta. Because if it's philosophy, it means it has to be taking elements from Vedanta, even though they don't know it. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the thing. You have to work with those elements. So they're looking for something good, something positive, some superior quality is what they're expecting to gain from the philosophy. Otherwise, why have a philosophy? Right? Or they're seeing it in the negative. Right? The end is nigh, and all these negative things. You know all those ones? Yeah, or the conspiracy is about fearing. But then that means there is the element of security. So the thing is, it's ideas how to become secure. But the taste is not in becoming secure, the taste is in being fearful. Right? Because they're not making a positive thing to it, they're just enjoying that or, you know, seemingly trying to get rid of it, but it's more about discussing it and talking about it. Who knows that? It's just like, the man is standing outside. He's there with his cameras and his thing. Yeah, so these people here, they're all, you know, doing this. They're controlling the world. They're, you know, doing everything, you know. But it's if they control the horizontal. They control the vertical. They, you know, all that kind of jazz, right? Okay? That reference makes sense. No?
Generally, but specifically, no. I don't
no, it's Twilight Zone.
Twilight Zone.
Okay. So they go on and so like this, and then you know one of them is coming by to go to the meeting, so they get out there. So you know what is this? You know when you're trying to control the world, what are you gonna you know this and that? What about the meeting? And the guy just ignores him, right? Of course. I mean, what do you got this madman on the street? Who do you know is this? Maybe a dinner or something. Who knows what it is? But whatever it is, he's making his whole thing. And then the guy will just go, and then they'll go. Then he'll turn to the camera. See, he's not gonna speak. It's all this, and say that proves. But what is it proven? All it proves is that well, the guy with the camera doesn't know how to behave. And that's the wrong forum for discussion. But because it's about fearing, then everybody wants to watch that. It's not about, you know, and then this is, they're making progress on solving the problem and being out there with the camera. Does that make sense? So what does it do? So in other words, if I can increase the fearing and increase the doubt, increase all these things, then I consider that I'm moving in the right direction. Why? Because the right direction is to feel fear. It's not to solve the problem.
It's one of the indirect rustles, isn't it? The ghastliness.
Yeah, fear, ghastliness, all those things. Exactly. So that's the whole thing. It's that's the taste they're looking for. So makes sense. So therefore, all philosophies are contained within Vedanta, whether they're in a positive way or in a negative way or whatever combination like that. If you understand the philosophy properly, then all other philosophies can be absorbed. That doesn't mean there's a compromise. It means you put it into its proper place. Yes, salt is very important, but you only put a pinch. Right? We haven't compromised. Oh, how can you take on that? That's such a bogus philosophy. You know? But no, the point is, no, it has its place here. And so, therefore, as a philosophy as it is, it has no meaning. Like the Buddhists, there's no happiness in the material world. We'll agree with that. But their method of solution, getting out of the world and destroy, that means destroying one's own identity, then everything's going out of balance. We're going out of the material world, destroying our material identity, but we're accepting our spiritual identity. But they don't get that far, so that's why it's only partial. Does that make sense? So if one sees like that, then there's no philosophy that there's a problem. It's just a matter of being able to identify what it is. What is the essential point? Right? So, one of the things of doing that, one, you have to know the philosophy nicely.
Yeah.
That's definitely there. That's why we study. But there's one other aspect that's very important. There's a few other aspects. Of course, there's dependence on the Lord and all that, so everything's revealed, so you actually understand it. But in your own qualities, just like you say, if I study, then I'll know this. But actually, more important is that ability to see what's good in others. Right? So if you have the tendency to fault find, you can't see what is good within the philosophy, so therefore you can't defeat it. On some mechanical and logic, you may be able to. But the whole point of defeating is not just to logically improve in it, but is to actually inspire the person that what they're looking for is in devotional service, and it's not completed what they're looking for. They're getting some taste, but they won't get a full taste unless it's in Krishna consciousness. But that means we have to give up criticizing others. Yes, yes, you understand? So that's why it said, the Uttama, no one can defeat them in philosophy. It's not that they technically necessarily know all the little finities, but they know the principal points, and they know how to find those principal points in what anybody else is doing, because you can see the good in something. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's what you're looking for.
Understood that the preaching technique is to help people to understand detachment. But if you just leave them in the mood of detachment without giving them an attachment,
yes.
Krishna,
yes.
Then that's only half the story.
Yes. And depending upon where they're starting from, that's what you use. If they're coming from the platform of attachment, you show how the material attachment is always going to be disappointing, but spiritual attachment won't be. So you don't have to even bring up so much about the detachment. You just bring up about the attachment. If someone's detached, then yes, getting detached from here is good. But the point is happiness is something positive. So in the material world, it's being applied, you know, you think it's something positive, but it's negative. That must mean there's an origin, if it's a reflection, that there is the spiritual world which has the origin. So, therefore, spiritual happiness is actually what you're looking for. So it's not enough. It's good to get out of the material world, good to give up that material association. But it's the soul who wants that. Because otherwise, who's wanting it? Who needs it? Brahman doesn't need it, because Brahman is transcendental. Brahman can't be transformed. So we're saying Brahman becomes transformed as a jiva, Brahman is transformable. So therefore the philosophy is thrown out the window. So that means the jiva actually has to be a separate concept. Right? That is also Brahman, but in junior or inferior Brahman. Right? You know, or minuscule Brahman. Right? Like that. So they're overwhelmed by Maya. And Maya, how can Maya exist without the Lord? If everything's Brahman, means Maya has to be based on the potency of the Lord. But it's an inferior potency. But it's still Brahman. So therefore, the Lord, the living entity, and material energy has to be established that all three are facts and eternal. Then you have to get the right relationship. So that they want to get out of the clutches of Maya, that's correct. That they want to come to the transcendental platform, that's correct. But that they're God and that there's everything's illusion, because if you're already God and you're already transcendental, why do you need to become? You know? So that means there can't be a transformation if we're going to accept it. So in other words, they're claiming to be impersonalist, but they're not, it's not complete. That's why exclusive impersonalism doesn't actually answer the question. Because otherwise, why is there variety? Why is there desire? Why is there endeavor? Right? Like that. That's why there has to be. So, what they're looking for to become happy by this process of detaching themselves from the material energy is fine. But they have to understand this, otherwise what's the point of all that endeavor if when you come to the perfectional platform you don't exist anyway? So what's the point of you being happy? Mm-hmm. Brahman's already happy. Why do you need to be happy? Because if Brahman's not transformable, then you could be here suffering eternally. And what has that got to do with Brahman? Because it's an illusion anyway. Because you don't exist, and therefore you're not suffering. You don't exist. Suffering, the material energy doesn't exist. Your combination doesn't exist. Therefore, suffering doesn't exist. Therefore, you're already on the platform of Ananda. Like that. So there's no you. So what's the point of the whole endeavor? So since the soul is the one that wants to be happy, that means you have to consider that the soul itself is eternal. And a part of Brahman. Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing, is whatever there is, it's there. Or you take the modern thing, yes, we're all equal, we should all be happy, we should all have a say, we should all cooperate together, these are all great things. But the whole point is what does equal mean? Equal means on the platform of soul. You can't say everybody. Yeah. English is so weird. Every body is the same. All conditionings are unique. But there's a pattern in it that is there that goes back to the Lord, the universal form. So the only equality can be in connection with the universal form or with the Lord. You try to create equality on the bodily platform, you'll never have it. You'll never will. People have been talking equality since a long time. And where is it? Does that make sense? It just doesn't work out. So therefore, the whole point is and it's just like, okay, we want equality. You got the guys on the top, they're creating so much problem. So then you get them all out there in the town square and cut their heads off. Okay, great. But who's ordering their heads cut off? Is everybody equal? Why is it Robespierre gets to do this? Why can't that little old lady sitting over there in the corner knitting, why can't she say, wait, cut that guy's head off? You know, I never liked him anyway, you know.
But everybody's equal, but some are more equal.
Yes, that's the whole point. That's the ultimate point of the material. The modern society is that some are more equal, so it's just pigs in suits, right? Like that. I think there's even a preparation that people eat called pigs in suits or pigs in blankets.
Suits
or something.
Pig or something.
Yeah, pigs in blankets or, you know, something like that. Like that. So the whole point is just because you change from a farmer who generally doesn't wear a suit into pigs that wear suits, it doesn't make it any different. So that's the whole weakness of the thing. But the point that they're looking for, that there is this sense of equality, that's good. So they just have to take it further. It's not on the bodily platform. It's not on the emotional, intellectual platform. It's on the platform of the soul. Right? And so if one works like that, then everyone gets their benefits. But then what's the ultimate benefit for the soul, right? The ultimate benefit for the soul is the spiritual benefit, the devotional benefit, right? But therefore the benefit, but we want to see benefit to the conditioned nature. So each conditioned nature being different gets benefit in a different way. Therefore, the Vedic system defines how each one will get their benefit. Does that make sense? Right? So they're not taking it far enough. That's the difficulty. They're not taking it far enough. Right? So that way everyone gets benefited, because everybody should get now, because otherwise then the elephant and the dog are going to get the same, either in volume or quality of food. Dog wants to eat sugar cane. Elephant wants to eat dog food. You know, dog biscuits. Yeah. Right? That makes sense. So that's the whole thing. So the concept of equality trying to be accomplished on the bodily platform will never work. You have to accomplish it on the spiritual platform. And cater to the needs of each conditioning, but then you have to know what the conditioning is. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
so that's that. So in other words, what they're looking for is good, but they don't know where to look for it. And so if they're sincere, then they'll catch the philosophy and see that they have to move forward. So it's not that those areas that they weren't interested in don't become areas of interest in Krishna consciousness, but now they become inappropriate places. But if it's that they're only using these philosophies for some other purpose, for money, sense gratification, power, all these different things, then they may not be sincere enough or to be able to take up very seriously Krishna consciousness. So that's where the element of the mixed devotional service comes in. You have to see, one still comes with whatever those intents are. So if one is looking for something higher than jnana, he moves faster forward. The jigyasu will move, okay, up to a point, stop, the artarti, they'll move up to a particular point and stop. Unless they come to that point of the jnani that they want to know the Lord. But then even there, knowing the Lord isn't enough. It's got to be that one wants to serve the Lord in devotion. Right? Because that verse that we saw that Kapila Muni's pointing out that is unfavorable to devotional service, you know, to pure bhakti, is that you have these sages who see that he's the Paramatma, the Supreme Brahman, all-pervading, in everything, outside of everything, making everything work. There's nothing separate from him. But what is their platform? Those are jnanis. Right? They see the Lord, they're nicely situated, but they're still neophytes, even though they're so advanced. That's the point. You can be liberated and still be a neophyte. Because neophyte is the degree of devotion you have, not the degree of knowledge or detachment. Knowledge and detachment is useful in devotional service. It isn't devotional service. It's a byproduct. That's the whole thing. It's a byproduct. It comes with the performance. But we think that is devotional service. No, it's useful in devotional service. Just like pots and pans are useful in cooking, but they're not cooking. Right? And better quality pots and pans make it easier to cook. But cooking can go on whether you have, the best quality restaurant kitchen, or you just have a tin can and a couple of bricks. Right? You can still cook if you understand the principles of cooking. Does that make sense? But even if you don't have the bricks, you just make the fire, you pull some coals out, you open the can of beans, and you stick it on top of the coals. It gets warm, right? But you have to know what you're doing, because otherwise you might not open the can. Right? And then it might explode, right? Right? Isn't it? Right, yeah. And then they'll have to call in the detectives to figure out, you know, who planted the bomb, right? When it's actually just the idiot camper killed himself, right? Right? Or you think, okay, it's going to explode, so I make a hole in the top of the can. Okay. It doesn't explode. Great. But now how do you eat it? Because now you have to open it while it's hot. And by the time you do get it open, it'll be cold. Right? So you have to actually know what you're doing. So even something as simple as heating a can of beans on a fire without a pot, you still have to know the principles of cooking. Yeah. Now it's just a matter of whether you're looking for like a higher grade culture or a lower grade culture on whether you take the top of the can fully off or not before you heat it on the fire.
If you take the top off, you can use it as a handle.
Yeah. This is experience. I would recommend 2/3 though.
Okay.
But actually half though would balance quite well. It might be harder to get your spoon inside. It would be longer if you did the other one. Maybe 3/5. You'd have to
take it off completely, then the ash goes inside.
Aha.
You have to keep it on while it's on the fire, and then you take it out.
But is it still connected to the can?
Yeah, you can make the can. Once it goes inside and the ash sitting on the...
No. What I'm saying is, do you remove the lid completely and then put it back? Or do you only remove it and just leave that little bit that keeps it connected?
Yeah, you keep it connected.
But then, then it's a problem that you still have that thing there that you can cut yourself on. Now, if you remove it completely, you can put it back on the top to keep the ash from going inside.
No, but it sinks.
Oh, and then it's hard to get out.
Yeah, then you can't get it out.
I see. Now we're talking about more experience here. See, now, you thought you were doing okay. You went from the neophyte up to the Madhyama platform. Here's the Uttama platform. Eating a can of baked beans on there. But you notice one thing about this? What's who's coming up with these ideas? Only Aussies.
As if you went camping.
Yeah, I did once.
No, that's funny.
It's actually advanced if you have a knife or something, right? But if not, then still you can use a rock to...
Yeah, no, that's getting... Then how do you eat it? Okay, we don't want to get into that.
Just bake it with some
bread. Put it on top of the bread, okay. The priest addressed the Lord, saying... So that was daksha. So Daksha's point was, the Lord appears to be impure, but is not. Although situated within Maya, he is pure since he has no relationship with it. That's the whole point of Daksha's prayer. Even though, okay. So he, my dear Lord, you are transcendental to all speculative positions. You are completely spiritual, devoid of all fear. You are always in control of the material energy. Even though you appear in the material energy, you are situated transcendentally. You are always free from material contamination because you are completely self-satisfied. So that was his point, right? Now the priest. The priest addressed the Lord saying, O Lord, transcendental to material contamination, by the curse offered by Lord Shiva's men, we have become attached to fruitive activities. And thus we are now fallen and therefore do not know anything about you. On the contrary, we are now involved in the injunctions of the three departments of the Vedic knowledge under the plea of executing rituals in the name of yajna, dharma, artha, and kama. Right? Moksha, they've completely forgotten. We know that you have made arrangements for distributing the respective shares of the demigods. The members of the assembly address the Lord, because they're not thinking about the Lord, even though they know that the Lord is there. When they do the yajnas, it's not about the Lord. Though they know that it's his arrangement, he's the one that has how the shares are distributed, the whole ritual itself, the potency of the ritual, what it can be gained, who's qualified, all the details are coming from the Lord. They're only interested in the details. Yes?
If they see the Lord, wouldn't it be wise for them to ask for remembrance of him?
Would be, but they're attached, so that's the difficulty. That's the point of neophytes. Neophytes go to the temple every day, see the Lord. What are they asking for? Yeah, but the point is it's not about, may my attachment to the material world disappear, and my attachment to, friends and family, and my money, and my position, and my everything else that I got that I really like, that this person's bothering, and I wish that would stop happening. And, if you could just get rid of that at the same time as...
Okay. The point is also that they were just cursed quite recently.
It's a good curse. It worked. That's what they're saying.
And fully.
It seems so. So the Lord's there, they're remembering. If the Lord's not there, they don't remember. If you bring it up, they'll remember. Because what we remember is that Jaimini, the Karmakanda, is they accept the position of the Lord as supreme. But it's not that they feel that there's any need to really address him or anything. They simply have to follow his laws of doing the yajna, because they follow the rule, I get the result. Right? It's just like you know that there's a guy who owns a store, but you don't care. You just went in, you got the things you wanted, you paid your money, you had them, you go. But the whole point of that, there's someone there and there's a whole system and that he's getting money and all, you don't care. So it's like that. Yeah. The members of the assembly addressed the Lord, "O exclusive shelter for all who are situated in troubled life. In this formidable fort of conditional existence, the time element, like a snake, is always looking for an opportunity to strike. This world is full of ditches of so-called happiness and distress, and there are many ferocious animals always ready to attack. The fire of lamentation is always blazing, and the mirage of false happiness is always alluring, but one has no shelter from them. Thus, foolish persons live in the cycle of birth and death, always overburdened in discharging their so-called duties, and we do not know when they will accept the shelter of your lotus feet." Right? So the whole thing is there in this fort of conditioned existence, right? Meaning the material world, right? Either within the body or within the material covering, whatever level of covering you're looking at, it's still a fort. It holds you in your place. Right? The body, you identify with that, you function from that, or the family, or the community, the nation, the world, the universe, however, the bigger it gets, the greater you think you are, but you're still bound. You're still imprisoned. And then and time is always looking for an opportunity. It means that every moment, that time will just take everything away. Right? And then you have ditches of happiness and distress. You fall into them. You think, one's good and one's bad, but they're both ditches. Right? So, that's the problem. That's the point. And then where you take shelter, then those are all the ferocious animals that are going to attack. Because we think it's my money, my family, my position, my home, whatever it is, these are all the, but probably in other places called fallible soldiers, right? So they're not going to, at any point, you have your house, it's so important, but, then it needs, something happens, you need to fix it, or this and that, or it's always going on. Does that make sense? You take shelter of the family members, then they need this, they need that, and it's about them, and so ultimately it's always taking.
It's interesting that in one aspect, it always says that you have to perform your duties.
Right.
And be satisfied with that.
Right.
The other end, though, they have all the ditches of happiness and distress.
Yes.
That you should avoid them as much as possible.
No, you just have to know that they're ditches.
Yeah.
So it's not about... See, it's like how happy you want to become, that's how happy you'll be distressed. So you don't go into the ditch of happiness, you won't end up in the ditch of distress.
It's up to you. It's up to the person to decide.
You don't decide whether you want to get more involved in the material world or not. You understand? So, it says here the ditches, full of ditches of so-called happiness and distress. It's not necessarily that they're separate ditches.
Just how you react.
The same ditch can create happiness or distress. Like that. So that's the thing. The person is walking down the street. It's really hot out, it's muggy, it's disgusting, and he sees the people sitting in the AC cars, and he says, "I really wish I was one of those." So for him, that's his happiness. Now the guy sitting in the AC car, and it's a jam, he's thinking, he's suffering. And he just sees people walking by, and he says, "I wish I was moving like that." You understand? So that's the thing. It's the same ditch. One person will say, "This is great." The other person will say, "It's not." I think there was a weird cat? Garfield. Okay. So you have Garfield sitting there, you have the dog sitting there, and you have John sitting there. So Garfield has his cat food. John, the dog has the dog food. John has the lasagna, right? So Garfield's eating his and going, he goes, yuck. And the other two are going, hmm, like that. He takes his bowl, he whacks it. It hits the dog's one, so it sits in front of the dog. The dog's one hits John's one, which then bounces off the wall and the other wall and ends up in front of Garfield. So then the next frame you see Garfield going, hmm. The dog's going, hmm, like that. And then John is going, yuck. Right, so the same thing, you know,
somebody's trash is another's treasure.
Yes, somebody's trash is another's treasure.
Say, whatever it is, somebody's food is somebody else's
poison. Yes, like that. Yeah, one man's food is another man's poison. So like that, it's the same thing. Everybody, that's because that's the whole point. It's relative. It's not actually based on what is happiness, what is distress. It's how you perceive it. Now there is natural forms of happiness. But the point is they can only be appreciated in connection with the Lord because the Lord is happiness. And we're so minuscule that the only way we can appreciate this unlimited happiness is connection with the unlimited. Like 1/10,000th the tip of the hair, how much volume of happiness is there? Right? Not a lot. You take the material world, that's a lot bigger than us. You know, I mean, anything that, you know, a speck of dust, you know, is bigger than us. You know? Yeah, that's what to do, you know. You know? Like that. You know, anything you can see under an ion microscope is bigger than us. Right? So it's just like, you know, we get easily overwhelmed. So only when we come in contact with the unlimited, then we get that unlimited benefit. So that's what we're looking for. Right. So, therefore, even though you follow the traditional elements of happiness, you're still not actually happy. You know, you're happy knowing that you have what everybody else thinks will make you happy, even though you're not happy. Right? When rich people are amongst rich people, they're just bickering. But when they're around poor people, they feel great. Why? Because the poor people think that they're the ones enjoying. So that's their enjoyment, thinking that others think they're enjoying. Is that something? So that's a, you know, it's like a member of one devotee. He was you know, very good at fashion. You know, it means, I don't know how to say it. It means,
fashion.
Yeah, but I'm saying that famous street in Paris, where Champs, what's it?
Champs-Élysées.
Alice. Champs-Élysées, whatever. You can never say it right. Champs-Élysées. Yeah, he's not here. But you do French?
Am I French?
No, you don't do French?
No, it's Champs-Élysées.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. But it's because I thought that side of the world was colonized by the French.
Yeah, not when I was around.
Oh, okay, so they've been gone a while. Okay. Okay, so it was back when Napoleon was enjoying his time at Corsica or something like that. Okay.
I definitely wasn't around.
Yeah. So, okay, so he's from that area, he lives there, and what he used to do before he joined for fun was he would dress mannequins, you know, in high-end stores. So what he knew about cloth and what to do and, you know, the colors and the way to, you know, it's like no one in the movement knew what he knew and did. So he would dress, you know, and he would look good. Because he looked good, others would try to copy it. And as soon as he'd see anyone copy it, he would not wear that ever again. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point, is you have something unique, and then, you know, you're moving, and it's great. But as soon as someone else has it, then it loses interest.
Yeah.
You know, that's the whole.
It's not unique
anymore. Yeah. So the... Let me get into this. Okay. But the point is the happiness that people are looking for, to that degree that you are endeavoring to be materially happy, that's the degree you'll be materially distressed. So if you're not looking to be materially happy, you won't be materially distressed. It doesn't mean the situations aren't there. But it's perception. Like we said, the same ditch can be seen as good, and the same ditch can be seen as bad. You know, just like there, I have this, I'm wearing this, I'm looking great, and one does look great. Someone else has the same thing. Now you feel distressed. You understand? So that's the thing. The girl's upstairs, she's getting ready for a program, her friends are coming over, they're going out, like that. You know, she spent, you know, hours working it out, maybe even thinking about it for days, you know, finally got it just the way she wants it. She walks down, the bell rings, she walks down the stairs, opens the door, you know, the friends come in, and then she noticed that one of the friends is wearing what she's wearing, or something similar. So then what does she do? She says, oh, just sit down, I'll be with you in a minute. What does that mean? She's going to go upstairs and change. I mean, she would get the other one to change, but, you know, it's a little hard. She's not in her house, so she's the one thing. So, understand? So that same point is, she was so happy walking down the stairs, she's so unhappy, the equally amount running back up the stairs. So that's the point, is that the ditch is just a ditch. You perceive what is good or bad. You understand?
There's so much equal, it's like
it's always equal, it's balance, material, that's what we're saying. If we talk about justice, right, the modes of nature, law of karma means justice. So that means how much happy you are, then that much sad you have to be. Right?
Yeah.
So that's the thing. Someone who really shows their happiness really shows their distress. Someone who doesn't show their happiness doesn't show distress. Right?
Yeah.
You know, it's the guy, he kicks the goal, he's running there, rips off his t-shirt, jumping around, doing all the different things like that. Now, if something goes wrong for him, he's doing the same thing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, it seems like, but you take the upper class, how you say, you know, person in society. Something works out good for them, there's a small little smile on their mouth. Something goes wrong for them, there's a slight little soberness. It's always balanced. So that's the thing, the material world will always be balanced. So, but the problem is the living entities, they're thinking that they're going to just have the happiness without the distress, time's not going to affect them, these ferocious animals aren't going to get them. You know, all these things, they somehow or another they're going to work all these things out by their endeavor. Because they think, I'm the proprietor, I'm the enjoyer, I'm the friend. Right? But as soon as they understand Krishna is that, then all these aspects become perfect. Right? Whatever your position, whatever you're doing, you see it, this connection to Krishna, then neither does it give you happiness and distress, but it gets you out of the material world and into the spiritual world. That makes sense. So that's all the subtleties then. That makes sense? So that's why then you were saying about duties. You were saying about duties, or you were saying about duties? You were saying about duties. Then it's a matter of, then what do you choose? Which ditch do you stand in? You know, everybody's got to have their own ditch, right? You know, like that. So you stand in the situate yourself according to your prescribed duties, because those prescribed duties are going to be the source of happiness or distress. Whatever happiness you could get, you'll get from there. Whatever distress you get from there, right? But people looking for the happiness where the distress comes. We think, I'll just take the happiness part, and not this. No, they go together. Right. So that's, you know, it's just like how much happiness is there in one, plastic little container with a zip top of instant noodles? Right? Something's there. Right? Not a whole lot. It's okay. But how much distress is there? Oh my God, I got to throw it away. You know? Right? Now, let's say we have a 15-course meal. Now, that's going to be a lot of happiness. But then you walk back in the kitchen and see the pile of dishes to wash. Then there's the distress. You understand? Yes.
Did you just say that about the duties? Because if you're doing your duties, then that is your happiness and distress. Whereas if you're doing some different duties that you're not supposed to, then that's not...
That's someone else's happiness and distress. Yeah. Yeah.
And there's that Trisha Upanishad verse. That
everyone has their quota. Yes.
Yeah.
So you have your quota of happiness and stress. So why would you want someone else's happiness and distress when you could have your own? Right? Is that it?
Yeah.
So you perform your duties. Then, but you're doing them with knowledge and detachment. Right? So then you're unaffected. So even though that is the source of happiness and distress, you're unaffected by the happiness and distress. It doesn't mean that happiness and distress don't come, but they don't affect you. That there is happiness and stress is not the problem. That it affects you is the problem.
Can you just go through what affects you means
there may be situations that are nice or not nice, but it doesn't disturb you in Krishna consciousness.
Okay.
Right? Because if we are lamenting in that, we forget Krishna. We get too ecstatic, we forget Krishna. Right? Maturity, lamenting or in ecstasy, we forget the Lord.
So it doesn't mean you drop out of Krishna consciousness, it just means you forget.
Yeah, you forget. So that's the point, is that the balance is easier to not get, but even that happiness and distress, that elation and lamentation may be different for different people. The volume is, so that's why you have to match it with your nature. Because you take somebody else's work, it seems to have less distress for you, but it also have less happiness. That's why when people take up someone else's duty, they don't do it for long. Right? Because they just thought that they would get a certain happiness out of that. But there's limited what you can get out of it, because then along with it comes its natural form of distress. Does that make sense? Okay. So then we do those duties, that will situate, then we do that to please the Lord, that will then cultivate that relationship with the Lord. That makes a permanent solution to becoming liberated. Right? You solve the material problem by getting liberated, but you solve the liberated problem by devotion. Because material is really temporary. Liberation is temporary. But devotion, that's eternal. Does that make sense? So material activity should result in renunciation, but renunciation should result in devotion. Does that make sense? Covered everything. Okay. Lord Shiva said, "My dear Lord, my mind and consciousness are always fixed on your lotus feet, which, as the source of all benediction and the fulfillment of all desires, are worshipped by all liberated great sages, because your lotus feet are worthy of worship. With my mind fixed on your lotus feet, I am no longer disturbed by persons who blaspheme me, claiming that my activities are not purified. I do not mind their accusations, and I excuse them out of compassion, just as you exhibit compassion towards all living entities." So, it appears that, on a side point, the prayer to the Lord, and at the same time it's addressing the relationship with Daksha, just like Daksha's prayer to the Lord addressed the relationship with Shiva. Like that. So, they are family. So he's pointing out that he's on the transcendental platform, but it's only by, he's on that platform by remembering the Lord, and it's only by the Lord's grace that he is able to progress and do things properly. So the ones was, we're just absorbed in materialistic activities. We don't remember the Lord, so how long are we going to be here? Those that are like that, then they get caught up in the material existence. Right? So they also have a problem. Then you have here Lord Shiva saying he's on that liberated platform, and that liberated platform is by worshiping the Lord. So even he's beyond what the others are talking about, it's still the worship of the Lord. Because the other ones are saying they don't know you or things like that. When will they accept the shelter of your lotus feet? Right? Like that. So they'll know that devotion. Then he's taking it the next step. Okay. Sri Bhrigu said, "My dear Lord, all living entities, beginning from the highest, namely Lord Brahma, down to the ordinary ant, are under the influence of the insurmountable spell of the illusory energy. And thus they are ignorant of their constitutional position. Everyone believes in the concept of the body, and all are thus submerged in the darkness of illusion. They are actually unable to understand how you live in every living entity as the Supersoul, nor can they understand your absolute position. But you are the eternal friend and protector of all surrendered souls. Therefore, please be kind towards us and forgive all our offenses." So here again, it's one of knowledge, right? What's happening? What's the position? Which is good. It's connected to the Lord, so that means his intelligence is connected to the Lord. But you notice here, it's not about so much about devotion. Just be kind, forgive us, right? Does that make sense? Yeah. And here we see, what do you call it? "I am no longer disturbed by persons who blaspheme, claiming that my activities are not purified. I do not mind their accusations, and I excuse them out of compassion, just as you exhibit compassion towards all living entities." Right? So the whole point is that's then the natural platform for the Vaishnava. Right? He's worried about the others being. He's forgiving, the Lord is forgiving. And the others are, when will you forgive us? When will they take shelter? Like that. So then you see Shiva's position is more dynamic. You know? Bhrigu Muni regarded the behavior of all the demigods as scandalous. And Srila Prabhupada's purport to verse 30 gives the appropriate remedy. Okay. "Ignorant personalities or conditioned souls have no choice but to accept their precarious condition under material nature. The only remedy is to surrender to Vishnu and always pray to be excused." Right? So it's not that you're not in that position. It's just that you're always connected to the Lord. "One should depend only on the causeless mercy of the Lord for deliverance and not even slightly on one's own strength." Right? So if it's your duty to perform something, that's why you're doing it. So here's another side that because we're looking at, okay, if I want the material benefit, I have to perform my duties. We've been generally talking on that side. So the performance of duties, since they've been given by the Lord, it gives, and you use that in the Lord's service, then you free yourself from the material, get what you want materially, free yourself from the material entanglement, and get devotion. Okay? We've been looking at it kind of like that. But now here, Prabhupada's bringing out a different point, is that unless you're doing your duties, because the duties are just what's God-given duties, I'm doing those, you know, by the Lord's grace. So I'm not thinking that I'm making my own endeavor. I'm only following the direction given by the Lord. Right? Because that's what I can do. I can take my free will and use it in the service of the Lord. But if I'm doing what I think I should be doing without doing my duties, then I'm independently acting without the mercy of the Lord. So since the devotee just wants to be dependent upon the mercy of the Lord, he just performs his duties only. He doesn't go outside of them, because then where's the surrender to the Lord? Where's the dependence upon the Lord? Because you're thinking, by my own endeavor, I'll be able to do it. Does that make sense? So that's another reason why the proper performance of duties is a better situation for the devotee. Right? If you're just looking for material, it's better. You're looking for liberation, it's better. You're looking for devotion, you know, it's better. But if you're looking for that full surrender, then that's where it has its final position. Right? Because it's about pleasing the Lord. So what will you do? You'll do your activities. Right? Why would you do someone else's activities? You're just trying to please the Lord, so why would some other activities be better? Does that make sense? Right? Someone's a farmer. He surrenders to the Lord, just wants to please the Lord. Now, how will he express his service to the Lord? Right? Through farming. That's what he has. It would be artificial for him to go to the city. Right? But the person in the city, how does it? He engages there. So whatever you have, that's what you use for Krishna. You know, whatever's favorable. The city's no longer favorable, you move to the farm. Farm's not favorable, you move to the city. But it's about pleasing the Lord and then applying your duties in that situation. Good. Okay. Lord Brahma. Okay. Okay. That is perfect position of a Krishna conscious person. The Lord is everyone's friend, but he is especially friendly to the surrendered soul. The simple process, therefore, is that a conditioned soul should remain surrendered to the Lord, and the Lord will give him all protection and keep him out of the clutches of material contamination. So we surrender to him, try to do our duties, and he'll protect us, because he's the friend. Right? He is the proprietor. He is the benefactor. So what benefit we want comes from the Lord. Why is that? Because he's our friend. And how is he able to do that? Because he owns everything. Yes?
Sometimes we see devotees or ourselves, we go through difficulties. It's very hard to see the hand of the Lord at the same time. Maybe
no, but it's the hand of the Lord is if you're looking too close, right? You can't see the forest for the trees, that kind of thing. It's the point is it's not the specifics of the particular situation. It's the material world. So that's just how the material world works. Why not you? You got someone else in mind. Why not him? But the whole point is it's just the way the material world works. So as Brahma pointed out before, is there's no need to chastise these people by a separate endeavor, because they're already being chastised by their own karma. That's what he was saying to Lord Shiva.
Devotees have Krishna karma.
Yes. But the point is that Krishna karma means it's a reduction of what would be your material karma. So be happy. Prabhupada said, you get a little cut on the end of your finger, you should have lost your whole arm. Yeah. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's the whole point. You know, you're sitting there going through clothes, looking to see in the lining whether there's anything valuable. And you're complaining like anything. But be happy that you're not in Camp 3. Does that make sense? So, you know, that's the whole point. It's just karma is reduced. Right? So that's all. It's just whatever. But Krishna reduced, that's why it's Krishna karma. It's just something to remind you. Like that. Because only because we need to be reminded. Or we're reminded, it comes up, and we don't need to be reminded, and then we set a nice example. So either is the situation is not ideal because you need a not ideal situation to actually become more Krishna conscious, or you're Krishna conscious enough that in that situation you can maintain yourself without getting disturbed. And you can say, okay, well, what the value is that? That's the value for those who need the situation and are disturbed. So they can see here someone in the same situation is not disturbing. So therefore, Krishna consciousness is the only thing that will work. So when you see is that I'm in the material world is suffering, whatever it is. But it's only by surrender to Krishna do we get out. And so it'll go away whenever he wants it to go away. And that means as we become Krishna conscious. So in any case, that's why it's pointed out, it's not about getting rid of the situations, it's about becoming Krishna conscious. Right? Because that's what we're saying. It's just how you perceive it. You know, it's like Lord Shiva means from Daksha's side, that situation that he's mentioning for Shiva, he doesn't get his portion of the sacrifice, you know, he's an outcast and all that kind of jazz, like that, then it's not looking good, right? But for Shiva, he's looking at it that, wow, now I don't have to go to all these programs, social programs with all these materialistic demigods and this and that. And he doesn't need it. He's happy on his own. So, therefore, Daksha's looking at it as an unfortunate position. Shiva's looking at it as a good position. So it can go either way. The point is we need to be engaged in our service. So that's the bottom line, is you have a right to perform your duties. No one can take that away. People may love to say they can because they want to flex their muscles, but they have to understand their muscles come from Krishna. So, you know.
Can we say that even though it seems like somebody will take your duty from you or make situations so unfavorable, but still you can find a way?
You can find how to apply your duty in a situation anyway. You know what I'm saying? Let's say someone's a manager. Something in managing comes up you can't do, you find something else to manage. Or you're doing business, that doesn't work, you find some other thing. But because business you can do. You know, or farming you can do. Your farm's there, it doesn't rain, it's a problem, you work out something else. You know, you know what I'm saying? You figure out if you take pipes, you know, long hoses, instead of having the water come out one end, you close the end off, you put little dinky holes all the way along. Right? And then you have a green field, and the guy next to you on the other side of the fence, it looks like it's just a pile of rocks. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's the whole thing, is you figure out how to make it work. So they can't take it away. You just have to be clever to figure out how this, you can, you know, pray, how to understand how to apply yourself, engage. But that particular situation may not continue, or it may. You don't know. But the dependency on the Lord, that's the thing you're looking for. Is that something? Yeah. So you will give him all protection to keep him out of the clutches of material contamination. That's the thing that Krishna is going to give you. It's not that you make the material situation go away of distress and replace it with the material situation of happiness. You want to make the material situation go away and not be influenced by the material energy. So material situation really means the material existence. You understand? Because it just, like we said, it just depends upon how you look at it. The same situation, you'll have many different people have different opinions on the exact same situation. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let's say we take a nice picture of the beach at Rio, okay? And then we have these people, and we show this to one person. So, what do you think of this beach? Is this happiness or not? And one person, that's great, that's where I want to be. And someone else goes, I'd hate to be there. Well, all these people, it's all in the bodily economy, this and that, blah, 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 like this and that. And then you take a nice picture of out in the forest and the country and the nice, you know, little creek and the this and the lake and all that. And you show it to those same two people. First guy goes, that is so boring, what would I do? The other guy goes, wow, great. So that's the thing, is that whatever it is one person will say this is nice, the other person will say it's not nice. You know, it's just like we were saying, is that, let us say you want to go out for a drive in the country. Do you want to take the Lamborghini or not? Nice curvy road. No? Let's try it like this. Okay, would the teenage boy want to take the Lamborghini out?
Yes.
Okay, now would the mom who has to go and do the week's shopping want to take the Lamborghini?
Yes.
Shopping meaning groceries, potatoes, sacks of flour. Because there's no trunk. There's only two seats. You understand? Okay? So that's the whole thing, is that the same thing, one person will say this is great, the other person will say it's not. Right? Now let's say you have your Hummer, right? Nice big old Hummer, you know, you have the nice wheels and all that. But you have to do some work downtown, right in the center of town. You want to take the Hummer or you want to take the Smart? Right? So that's the whole thing, is that it one thing is great in one situation, another situation is not. No? Yeah, so that's the whole thing. You always have to... That's the point, is that... So it's not about the situation, it's about how we view it, our attachments and all those. So we get rid of attachment, then the situation doesn't bother us. But getting rid of the attachment doesn't make us happy either. So we want to be happy. So how do we get rid of material happiness and distress and remain happy, free from distress? Because that's what we want, right? Our goal is to be happy and not unhappy. So in the material world, you can't get rid of the distress and only keep the happiness. It just doesn't work. So only in the spiritual world can you get rid of the distress and only have the happiness. But that means you have to get rid of material happiness also. So it's a...
That's, due to ignorance, we may either not be doing our duty or doing somebody else's duty. But the intent or desire to please Krishna might be there.
Yes, no, that's fine. But that's a matter, if you don't know or stuff like that, then that's okay. You're just doing what you're doing, you're trying to please Krishna. So with time it'll come into whatever it needs to come into. But if your specific intent is you don't want to do your duty, you think someone else's duty will give you more benefit. You know what I'm saying? So that's the difficulty. Like somebody, let's say, wants to be on a committee. They don't qualify to be on the committee, but they demand to be there because they think they'll get more benefit out of it, personally. Not that they want to actually do the job of the committee.
So in ignorance, but still wanting to please Krishna, then the knowledge will come.
Yes. So if you're trying to please Krishna by doing that, even if it is self-centered, it will eventually start to adjust itself. But the point is depending upon your determination for your own benefit, it will just take that much longer. Right? Okay. Lord Brahma said, "My dear Lord, your personality and eternal form cannot be understood by any person who is trying to know you through the different processes of acquiring knowledge. Your position is always transcendental to the material creation. Whereas the empiric attempt to understand you as material..." Oh, excuse me. "Your position is always transcendental to the material creation." Well. "Whereas the empiric attempt to understand you is material, as are its objectives and instruments." So, the process of acquiring knowledge is not going to bring you to understanding the Lord. It's only through devotion. Right? So all these processes are all material, and what they're trying to use is material, and the goals they want to get is material. Right? So the impersonalist, his goal is actually material. He wants liberation, but it's in connection with the material world. It's not connection with the spiritual world. Right? And the methods he uses, whatever he uses, either following rules, not following rules. But all these are material instruments, his body, everything like that. Everything's material, because he can't see it. Because for the Maya body, if it has form and variety and activity, it's material. But the Maya body is using his body, his sannyas, his knowledge, his everything, his little ashram. But according to them, that's all illusion. So he's just using illusion to become liberated. How does that work? Right? So that's the point Brahma's making. It's all material. So only through devotion can you know the Lord. King Indra said, "My dear Lord, your transcendental form with eight hands and weapons, and each of them appears for the welfare of the entire universe, and is very pleasing to the mind and eyes. In such a form, your lordship is always prepared to punish the demons who are envious of your devotees." right? Because he's come with all his weapons. He has the lotus and the conch are for the devotees. You know, the disc and the club are for controlling the demons. So that's the four-armed form. And now in the eight-armed form, you came with four more weapons. So six weapons and two for the, for the devotees. Then he's bringing that out.
Yes. Different dress, they should also show us different levels of relationship with Krishna.
Yeah, that and different aspects than that. Because it's also natural if somebody said something, you can't say something again. You ever been like at the, whatever it is, the Vyasa Puja and all that? And then you're thinking, I'm going to say this. And then as you're listening, then they said it. Uh-oh, now what am I going to say? And then you go on like this and that. And, you know, finally when it gets to the point, you have nothing to say. But, you know, you kind of, you know. And then you just say something and the next guy goes, oh, I was going to say that. I doubt that they have this problem. The point is, that it's natural you say something different, unique, or even if it's on the same thing, you have to bring out a unique angle. Like that. So someone told a story that you were going to tell, you have to tell a different angle of that story so it sounds different. Right? But here it's in glorification of the Lord. You know, there were more, you know, we may be more worried about not looking like an idiot. You know, so. Right, isn't that the point of Vyasa Puja, to not look like an idiot? Yeah. Yeah, so the Lord, his form, his pastimes, name, form, qualities, everything is for the benefit of all the living entities, the entire universe. And so he supports the devotees with that, by the wonderfulness, and then he destroys the demons with that. The wise are the performers of the sacrifice said, my dear Lord, this sacrifice was arranged under the instruction of Brahma. But unfortunately, Lord Shiva, being angry at Daksha, devastated the entire scene. And because of his anger, the animals meant for sacrifice are lying dead. Therefore, the preparations of the yajna have been lost. By the glance of your lotus eyes, the sanctity of the sacrificial arena may be again invoked. So, in other words, everything being religious, everything being nice, and that by the Lord's grace, everything may be in its proper place again. All right, he did kind of make a mess out of the place. Daksha, but you know, you have to remember these are the ladies that were there before that weren't on the like that. Yeah, so. Yeah. But that's the whole point. But the point is because it's mental thought, so now what do you want to do? What do you need? What is the inclination to do now?
Continue with me.
But what would be now? The prayer is being made, so it's become auspicious. Make everything nice. Make everything that. Because that's the whole thing. The lady's just like a nice, comfortable, stable environment.
And they're like lady.
Yeah. Sure. So the idea is the environment of what it is that makes you happy should be stable, but your focus, your activities, the emotions felt within that stable environment will be totally unstable. Right? Does that make sense?
So, it means if the environment is not stable, then
it means that it's like this. If you have a stable environment, then the variety created by the lady and all the different, you know, how you say, platforms of body, mind, and words, then is nice. But if there isn't a stable environment, it drives you crazy. Does that make sense? So the idea is how to create a stable environment in which one can then focus on these things. So they have a stable environment, so therefore it works very nicely. Smoke. The smoke. Oh, okay. Yes. Never does. Is it smokers? Just such a great class.
Oh.
Yeah.
<That's true.
laughs> Yeah. Okay. The sages pray, my dear Lord, your activities are most wonderful. Well, maybe we should get the, you know, like those, like swimming goggles or something. You know, you have a bunch of those there. You can put those on. You know, so.
When they
motivate,
and
they motivate,
like,
oh yeah, I mean the single one.
Yeah. Yeah, the big one. You kind of look for those bundles.
and they're there, right? You know. Of course, as you get to the gears, right? You know, so,
yeah. Imagine class photo.
Yeah, that would be. That would be fun. Yeah, you know, just for fun, somebody brings the snorkel also.
Just in case.
Yeah. Dear Lord, your activities are most wonderful, and although you do everything by your different potencies, you are not at all attached to such activities. You are not even attached to the goddess of fortune, who is worshipped by the great demigods like Brahma, who pray to achieve her mercy. Right, so you see, as everybody kind of in their nature of realization is praying. Right? So the sages, because they're detached from the material energy and seeing the Lord's potencies, then they see how this is all wonderful and everything, and how he's detached from everything. Right? Even the goddess of fortune. But it doesn't mean he's not interacting, they're just pointing out this aspect. You know, so you see the ladies are discussing on religion, prayer, the sages on detachment, Indra on, you know, greatness of just, you know, how you say, presentation and benedicting and, you know, being the leader, like that. Bhrigu Muni is on, you know, okay, now we've done all this stuff, we're an illusion and all this, even though we're the Brahmins, we're making all these mistakes. Lord Shiva on how he's transcendental. You know, and his compassion. So it's interesting, each one according to the realization. So that's the thing, is in this case, no one has to worry that anybody else is going to say their points. Right? The Siddhas prayed, like an elephant that has suffered in a forest fire but can forget all its troubles by entering a river. Our minds, O Lord, always merge in the nectarian ocean of your transcendental pastimes. And they desire never to leave such transcendental bliss, which is as good as the pleasure of merging in the absolute. Right, so they're just saying it's as good as. They're not saying it's better. They're just saying, you know, everyone talks about this. That just by remembering the Lord, you're on this platform of happiness. Right. So they're appreciating. So this would be shanta, you know, that kind of aspect. They're just appreciating. The wife of Daksha prayed as follows. My dear Lord, it is very fortunate that you have appeared in this arena of sacrifice. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you, and I request that you be pleased on this occasion. The sacrificial arena is not beautiful without you, just as the body is not beautiful without the head. Okay, so you don't always want to take your head with you to a social program. So see, hers is about it becoming beautiful, but it's from a step further, right? The other wives of the Brahmins, it was about making it auspicious so that sacrifice could go on. It was ruined, but now you're here, now everything's auspicious again. They're talking about it was destroyed, but by you being here, now you've made it auspicious.
Maybe she has a point because Daksha kind of lost his. That's his wife.
Yeah, well, without Krishna consciousness, then he's not as beautiful, I guess. He would have looked a little better if he'd been more Krishna conscious. Is that what you're trying to say? So she's also making a comment to Daksha, right? You know? But, so you see, the flavor is slightly different. You know, more about him as a person, while the other is more about him as the establisher of Dharma, making things auspicious, and not doing that makes it inauspicious. The governors of various planets, Lokapala, spoke as follows. My dear Lord, we believe only in our direct perception. But under the circumstances, we do not know whether we have actually seen you with our material senses. But by our material senses, we can simply perceive the cosmic manifestation. But you are beyond the five elements. You are the sixth. We see you, therefore, as a creation of the material world. Right? So they're saying is, you're beyond. Our senses can perceive the material world, so if we're perceiving you, then we will see you as part of the material world. Right? So that's, you know, what they're bringing up. So that's what one wants to avoid. That's why it said in the beginning, by his mercy, then they're able to see. Even though they can't see, like these governors of the various planets, he allows them to see. The great mystic said, "Dear Lord, persons who see you as non-different from themselves, knowing that you are the supersoul of all living entities, are certainly very, very dear to you." And so non-different themselves, meaning that they're on the transcendental platform, they're a person, you know, the element of interaction. So they see, not I want to be happy, so the Lord wants to be happy. So then we're trying to work in such a way that that relationship can develop. "You are very favorable towards those who engage in devotional service, accepting you as the Lord and themselves as the servants. By your mercy, you are always inclined in their favor. We offer our respectful obeisances unto the Supreme, who has created varieties of manifestations and put them under the spell of the three qualities of the material world. In order to create, maintain, and annihilate them." So he's created the varieties of material existence and then put them under the various modes. And in this way, then, there's creator, creation, mode of passion, there's maintenance, mode of goodness, and destruction, mode of ignorance. "He himself is not under the control of the external energy. In his personal feature, he is completely devoid of the variegated manifestation of material qualities. And he is under no illusion of false identification." So he is a person, is not. Brahman is pervading, but it's still not under the illusion or that. But as the universal form, then we see he's pervading, and all these different qualities that are there are coming from him. So, because the point is it can only be him. It can't be something else, but at the same time, he's different from it. Does that make sense? So that aspect of dealing on the material, that's that aspect that we see that's in the Purusha avatars. So they're dealing with this, but more closely dealing than we see Shiva. That's why we saw the prayers of Brahma. He's talking about Shiva as the one who's dealing with everything in the universe, but under the potency of the Supreme Lord, because he is an expansion and is a transformation. It's Krishna's potency that he's acting. But that action of dealing with the material energy, manifesting it and everything like that, that's coming from, that will be coming from that aspect of Shiva, because the ignorance is there. And he is under no illusion of false identification. The personified Veda said, "We offer our respectful obeisances unto you, the Lord, the shelter of the quality of goodness, and therefore the source of all religion, austerity, and penance. For you are transcendental to all material qualities, and no one knows you or your actual situation." Because no one can really know, because how does limited know unlimited? How does the effect know the cause? So no one can actually know Krishna other than Krishna. But the point is you only need to know how much of Krishna is what you're interacting, who you're interacting with. Does that make sense? Just like for the mother to carry on the relationship with the child, do they need to know all the detail of what they do with their friends and talking and what kind of jokes they...
Sometimes.
It's just like this. Let's say they're doing something, like the kids are out in the sandbox and poking with sticks and doing that. But I'm just saying, you need to know what the feelings that they're exchanging and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. So, in other words, you're talking about that's what's in the realm of the parental relationship, to see that they do things properly, are raised properly. That's all. But outside of that rasa, you don't need to know. Right? So, therefore, then, for a relationship, we don't have to know outside of that. So to know Krishna as a person, we don't have to understand him as God. Right? We understand he is God, but we don't have to, just like the mom may understand that her son is the prime minister, but does that mean she has to understand all the government business and all the work he does to be able to have the relationship between them going? Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's the kind of thing, is that we only need to know how much we need to know in the relationship. Because beyond that, what's the point of it? There's no benefit.
as lokapalas. So they were saying that they see him as a manifestation of this.
Well, it didn't say, it said the various, oh, it said lokapala, yeah. Because they're saying with this, so from that position, they're controlling the material energy. They see the material energy working, and that's all that they're able to appreciate.
But they still recognize it as the supreme life.
That's there, but at the same time, they have a tendency to look at the material side. You know, because that's what they do. So that's why it's not an ideal situation. So becoming a demigod is not your actual ideal situation for the next birth of a devotee. The fire god said, "My dear Lord, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you, because by your favor I am as luminous as blazing fire, and I accept the offerings mixed with butter and offered in sacrifice. The five kinds of offerings according to the Yajurveda are all your different energies, and you are worshipped by five kinds of Vedic hymns. Sacrifice means your supreme personality of Godhead." The demigod said, okay, sacrifice means your supreme personality of God. So sacrifice means himself. He is sacrifice. As Varaha, he is the personification of sacrifice. The demigod said, "Dear Lord, formerly when there was a devastation, you conserved all the different energies of material manifestation. At that time, all the inhabitants of the higher planets, represented by such liberated souls as Sanaka, were meditating on you by philosophical speculation. You are therefore the original person, and you rest on the water of devastation on the bed of the satyr snake. Now today you are visible to us, who are all your servants. Please give us protection." So it's not that some of these personalities may be in different capacities also. And so they're just pointing out the different sides, but yeah, okay. So everything is wound up in him. The others are saying all the energies come from you, and here's saying everything's wound up in you, right? And everything having wound up in you, the great sages on the higher planets who aren't destroyed, they're meditating on you. So everything goes into you that's there, and whoever's left is meditating on you. So it's basically all there is him. The Gandharva said, "Dear Lord, all the demigods, including Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, Indra, and Marichi, and all the great sages, are all not only different parts and parcels of your body, differentiated parts and parcels of your body. You are the supreme, almighty great. The whole creation is just like a plaything for you. We always accept you as the supreme personality of Godhead, and we offer our respectful obeisances unto you." So he's saying that all the personalities there, the potencies and what they do, all is just a manifestation of variegated potencies of the Lord. So they're just saying, so whatever the demigods are able to do, that's just as part of the Lord. The Vidyadhara said, "My dear Lord, this human form of body is meant for attaining the highest perfectional objective. But, impelled by your external energy, the living entity misidentifies himself with his body and with the material energy. And therefore, influenced by Maya, he wants to become happy by material enjoyment. He is misled and always attracted by temporary, illusory happiness. But your transcendental activities are so powerful that if one engages in the hearing and chanting of such topics, he can be delivered from illusion." So it's interesting how who's coming out with these more devotional elements. So here, Gandharva's Vidyadharas actually gave nicer, you know, prayers that were, you know, on just on him as a person and things like that. Though they don't necessarily get to very deep, but at least there's a little. It's a little softer. It's not because they're not as powerful as these other demigods. The Brahmana said, "My dear Lord, you are sacrifice personified. You are the offerings of clarified butter. You are the fire. You are the chanting of Vedic hymns by which the sacrifice is conducted. You are the fuel. You are the flame. You are the kusagrass, and you are the sacrificial pots. You are the priests who perform the yajna. You are the demigods headed by Indra, and you are the sacrificial animal. Everything that is sacrificed is you or your energy. Dear Lord, O personified Vedic knowledge, in the past millennium, long, long ago, when you appeared as the great boar incarnation, you picked up the world from the water, as an elephant picks up a lotus flower from a lake. When you vibrated transcendental sound in the gigantic form of a boar, the sound was accepted as a sacred hymn. And great sages like Sanaka meditated upon it and offered prayers for your glorification. Dear Lord, we are awaiting your audience because we have been unable to perform the yajnas according to Vedic rituals. We pray unto you, therefore, to be pleased with us. Simply by chanting your holy name, one can surpass all obstacles. We offer our respectful obeisances unto you in your presence. So here is at their point how he is everything, and so everything has to be done in connection with him. So by his grace, by always remembering the Lord, then by his grace, then all these things can be done. Verses 48 to 57, Lord Vishnu reveals his nature. Sri Maitreya said, after Lord Vishnu was glorified by all present, Daksha, his consciousness purified, arranged to begin the yajna, which had been devastated by the followers of Lord Shiva. Maitreya continued, my dear sinless Vidura, Lord Vishnu is actually the enjoyer of the results of all sacrifices. Yet because of his being the supersoul of all living entities, he was satisfied simply with his share of the sacrificial offerings. He therefore addressed Daksha in a pleasing attitude, right? Because everything is his, but because he's in everyone's heart, he's with the living entity, so it's about the living entity. So therefore he's happy to just get his share and that everybody else gets theirs. Because then you can, the interaction, the relationship and everything like this. Rather than he's God, he gets everything. Right? He therefore addressed Daksha in a pleasing attitude. Lord Vishnu replied, Brahma, Lord Shiva and I are the supreme cause of the material manifestation. I am the supersoul, the self-sufficient witness. But impersonally, there is no difference between Brahma, Shiva, and me. So that's what we're saying on that impersonal platform, on how the material world is manifest. There's technically no difference. Because the point is if Mahavishnu is in the mood of creating, maintaining, and destroying, creation means the Brahma aspect, maintaining means the Vishnu aspect, destroying means the Shiva aspect. So all these three combined is what makes this world, because at every moment everything's being generated, maintained, and destroyed. Right? Maintenance means it's being generated. But at the same time, why do you have to maintain? Because it's being destroyed. So it's just whichever is prominent at the time is the thing. So on that level, then they're basically not different, because it's all just potencies of the Lord, glories of the Lord. When you get to the personal platform, then you have a difference. Right? But on the impersonal platform, there's not that much of a difference. Okay. The Lord continued, my dear Daksha Dvija, I am the original personality of Godhead. But in order to create, maintain, and annihilate this cause of manifestation, I act through my material energy according to the different grades of activity. My representations are differently named, right? So he acts through his material energy, but depending upon the activity itself, then different names are given. Does that make sense? So it's only the one Lord acting. So there's no difference in anything, technically, on the impersonal platform. But because of how the action is, you have different terminologies. Right? So the same activity in education will have a different name than if it's in administration, different names if it's business, different names if it's in art. you know what I'm saying? So that's the thing. So we get confused that there's so much variety like that. But actually it's just the Lord and his potency. That's all there is. Yes?
For instance, maintenance and all those four different bodies.
Yes, it's just a matter of let's say if you're going to the kitchen, you're getting ready for cooking, what are you doing? You're preparing.
Preparing.
right? But now let's say if you're doing something, you're about to do some construction, what do you call it? Right? You're setting up.
Assembly.
Yeah. It's the same thing, but you're setting up. You know, you don't so much set up the kitchen, but you set up your tools. You understand?
Yeah.
And so that's what it's meaning, is that even though it's the same thing, it's happening in everything. But because these differently grades of activities, then my representations are differently named. So therefore, Brahma, Shiva, Vishnu, they're differently named because of the different functions. But ultimately, it's just Krishna's potency. But that doesn't mean that they are the same as him, because they're his manifestations. But he as a person is beyond them. Right? So it's Krishna who expands as Vishnu. As Vishnu expands as Brahma and Shiva. But all that potency, all that ability is all Krishna's. So therefore you get on this level, then you get down when you just manage the universe, that's Indra. When you're dealing with the fire, that's Agni. The wind, that's Vayu. You know, the law and punishment, that's Yama. Srila Prabhupada explains, everything is generated from Lord Vishnu. Oh. Okay. So it looks like we'll do that one later.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Shri Prabhupada ki, Jai Sarva Vedha Bhakti Vrinda ki, Jai Nitai Gopi.